Alright, we left off last time. We were on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph. Anybody who wasn't here last week, we covered a lot of material last week. But we skipped to the end to talk about Hagalas Kelim. We'll talk a little bit more about that today. So last week what we had basically gone through is really two basic principles. That first one is Kibolo Kach Polto. The way something absorbs is the way it emits. So if it is used cold, generally speaking, you just need to rinse it. If it is used with hot water, with a liquid medium, then you need to use boiling hot water to be magile to get the absorptions out. And if it was used on the fire without a liquid medium, then you require libun. And the second point was that if one holds, as we do, that no Saint Tom of Gam is permitted, that something that has that tam of prohibited food, which has a negative impact in flavoring other food, is permitted. That even though there is tam of the yesur, but nonetheless it is detrimental to the overall flavor. So then we say, if we say no saying tam lefgam is permitted, as we do, then the only time cooking in a non-kosher kli will render the food treif is if you cooked within 24 hours of the original cooking. After 24 hours, what's called an eino ben yomos, which is what Rashi and Tosfos claim, that even if it has a full night not being used, that's also called eino ben yomos. We generally normally like to be machmir for the opinion that it has to be unused for 24 hours, that any pot that was unused for 24 hours and then it's clean and you cook within it, you cook in food in it, even though it is a treif pot, nonetheless, after 24 hours, the food that you cook will not be prohibited. With one exception, if we mention this, we did see this when we did the second parak, is that the food is sharp. If the food is sharp, then the assumption is a sharp food. The Gemara's original example was asafetida, which is a very pungent thing, chiltis, and the Gemara in Chulin, many Rishonim, but not all Rishonim, say tznon, radishes, and many of the Rishonim add in things like in the onion family, chrein is discussed in Shulchan Aruch.
Garlic.
Garlic's the onion family, yeah. Garlic is included, but yes, garlic's part of the onion family. Garlic, leeks, onions, scallions. Some even say even to lemons, which are not what we would call sharp, they are acidic.
Sour.
Nonetheless, they are some say that's included as well. So there's a broad range of things that if you were to cook them when they are still very sharp, acidic, whatever else, could be an issue. Once onions are cooked, let's say, and then if you throw them into something, they're already sweet, and that's not it's not what we call a davar charif. But generally speaking, if you take meat and you cook it in a pot that was milchik, but it wasn't used within 24 hours with milk, so then the assumption is that even though you're not allowed to cook that way, the food is permitted. So, okay, so now the Gemara is going to talk a little bit more about the question of when Hagalah is needed, when Libun is needed, and it actually produces a very important point in terms of Hilchos Pesach, almost in terms of Hilchos Pesach, a couple of issues.
I came across the word Libun Kal.
Libun Kal.
What's Libun Kal?
So the Gemara is going to say at the bottom
Hagalah?
The Gemara on the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Aleph is going to say, Ketzad Malav, if you would look down for a moment, once we're here already, we hope we'll get to this anyway. Viad Kama Malabdon, fourth line from the bottom, how much is the Liban Amar of Mani Achatasha Klipasan? It's like you remove a layer, almost. You burn off a layer or something like that. We usually say that it's Libun Chamor. Real Libun is Achein He Nitzotzos Nitzin Hemena. Sparks off its metal and sparks are flying off of it. Then that's also called Libun Chamor. Libun Kal is a lesser degree, a lighter Libun. Libun Kal is, if you take the Shulchan Aruch says, the Gemara doesn't talk about Libun Kal. If you take kash, you take straw, today they'll tell you to take paper, and you touch it to the surface, if it will spontaneously ignite, then that's called Libun Kal. I know that paper does, the boiling, the ignition point of paper is Fahrenheit 452.
Ignition.
No, I said ignition. I correct myself. So the ignition point of the paper is 452 degrees Fahrenheit. And so theoretically that already constitutes the temperature of Libun Kal. When you look in Shulchan Aruch, as a general rule, things, it's usually assumed that anything that requires Libun Al Pidin, you require Libun Chamor. Any situation where you don't require Libun Al Pidin, But hagala is difficult to do. Let's say because if you have a pot that won't fit in anything else, or you have a pot with like little cracks that really should only require hagala, but you can't really do. We're afraid about hagala in those things. So then the Ramos frequently a number of times in Siman Tufton Aleph and Or Chaim, which is really the main siman on hagala skelim Pesach, the Ramos says that when these cases you can use libun kal. So that's what libun kal is. But right now the Gemara doesn't mention, as far as I know, libun kal. It only knows of one libun, which is libun chamor. There is actually machlokas. I don't know all the pratim, and I think it may sort of relate to this. What do you do with an oven that's not self-cleaning? And maybe even some people are very reluctant to use the self-cleaning ovens. Apparently, they can potentially be very damaging to the oven, which is kind of mind-boggling because they were built that way. But right. I just got a shaila from someone about afraid to use the self-cleaning feature in their oven because other people have done it and something has cracked or something like that.
The issue is the instructions that come with every oven say, do not leave the racks in the self-cleaning cycle. The OU guide says, even though it may destroy your oven, you need to leave your racks in the oven.
Well, why should the racks destroy anything but the racks?
Maybe the wheels?
The racks are
wheels?
Made, no, there are no wheels.
Oh.
It's not a racks.
You'll have a clean oven, but it's not going to work.
The racks are made of a much lighter metal. It may also reflect the heat. I just don't think they can take the 700-degree.
Okay. So, we've been blessed not to have our ovens go haywire on us with the racks. But anyway, but I'm also told that they're starting to do away with the self-cleaning feature. Kach Shamati, from a reasonably a source I trust very much.
So what we did is, in case it's relevant, we left the racks in for an hour, then we turned off the four-hour self-clean cycle, took the racks out, and then put the rest of the self-clean.
You can't even interrupt it in the middle. So I mean,
You
can't open it. Oh, I don't know. Okay.
No, you press cancel, and then it'll take 25 minutes until it cools down.
They'll let you open it. Okay. Interesting to know. Okay, so anyway.
So an hour is enough?
So what I was going to say was that there's a machlokas, apparently, Rav Moshe or Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler was the one who was makil, and I think this is common practice. On ovens that don't have a self-clean oven, you turn the oven up as hot as it will go, which many ovens usually like 550, and you leave it for an hour or something like that, and it's effectively kabolo kachpolto.
Since the self-clean cycle is more in the 700-800-degree range, an hour on self-clean is more than libun kal of an hour.
So,
it
seems to be the position, which is not, I'm not sure, so clearly, I certainly accept by all, is that you're applying even kibolo kach polto when it comes to libun, which is a very questionable, I'll admit, even though we do this, it's very questionable, as a pure concept, it's somewhat questionable because the principle of libun, as I mentioned this last week, doesn't work based upon kibolo kach polto. It's not being maflit that which has been absorbed, causing it to be emitted. It's being sarfa b'mkomo. So theoretically, you may require a certain temperature to accomplish that sreifa. So it's not clear why libun kal should work. So again, the Rama only says libun kal in situations the medina only require libun that only require hagala. Now I could explain the ovens in a different way, which is the following. There's a machlokas, I mean, this is a radical thing to say, but an oven that's clean, according to the Shulchan Aruch and according to the Halacha, an oven that's clean is never, almost by definition, never treif. It's never treif because you don't cook food in the oven itself. The only concern is things that the oven might potentially have absorbed, and that's fundamentally, let me frame it this way. In our ovens, which are both large, by Talmudic standards or by Rishonim standards, and are vented. We don't cook milk and meat in the oven at the same time, but al pidin. If you did, it's certainly kosher after the fact. There's no question about that. Nothing is treif, because we say
unwrapped.
Rechalav milsahi is the principle. It's a machlokas. Are we shown in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins? The Gemara's example is, hopefully we'll get to Avodah Zarah today, is the Gemara Msachim in Ketzat Solon in the 7th to 8th parak. Dafayin Vav says that if you, has a machlokas Rav and Levi, if you take basar nevela and basar shchuta, kosher meat, treif meat, roast them in the oven at the same time. As a machlokas, Rav says that even if the nevela meat is lean and the shchuta meat is juicy, it's still aser. The juice and Levi says even if the nevela meat is juicy and the kosher meat is only lean, nonetheless he says it's mutter. And we say it's mutter b'di'evin. So it's a machlokas harishon had a paskin like Rav Levi. The Shulchan Aruch we paskin like Levi. And certainly if the oven is big and has an opening, which our ovens do, they are vented and they are large by Rishonim standards. 12 esronim is the size. So then. we say that certainly b'di'evad reich alav milsa, it doesn't aser anything. So there, now the question is though, what about on Pesach? So in general, if you have an oven that's, even if you had trace stuff burned, trace stuff that had spilled onto the bottom of the oven and wasn't totally burned, and you cooked it with kosher stuff, b'di'evad, it's no worse than the Levi's case of basar shkuta basar nevela. So certainly once you've cleaned the oven, or it's no longer edible, it's just burned totally, there's no shaila whatsoever. The only question that comes up really is by Pesach. Is there a problem of, let's say you cook in an oven, chametz, crazy person, okay, nobody should have a heart attack, I'm glad none of the women are here right now. Crazy person cooks chametz, and...
Men cook also.
Marshall, I don't know about your experience, but I have had broad experience knowing the difference between not men and women cooking, but how they regard the halachos of the kitchen. And women are much more machmir, and there are lots of things that men think that are mutadu, which are mutadu, and they can get their heads taken off if they try doing it. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, I told the famous story of the Rav and Chaim, so we know the story. So anyway, so the bottom line is, this crazy person decides he's going to bake matzah and chametz in the oven at the same time, on Pesach. So what's the din? So the Shulchan Aruch has two deos. Whether reich alav milsahi, that the reach doesn't count and does not say things, it applies by chametz but Pesach or not. So we, I think, are probably and try to be machbir. The assumption, the machlokus is whether what does it mean reich alav milsahi? Does it mean that reach really is nothing? It doesn't get into the other thing, or does it mean, which I think is the true in mitzias, regardless of the halacha, is it means that it's batel? That the reach is too small an amount, and therefore it's batel. And the nafgamina now occurs on Pesach, because on Pesach there's no bittel whatsoever. Before Pesach is one thing, but on Pesach nothing is batel. So if reach la milsahi is based upon that it just isn't anything, then even on Pesach it's kosher. But if it's based upon bittel, then in fact it would be aser. So in the first place, it's already a machlokas whether recha is even a problem, whether an oven at all that's clean should require kasher for Pesach. So once you already can take that into consideration, and even there, it's probably irrelevant that the oven's totally clean. So there's no chametz ban on the oven. If whatever chametz might be would only have been absorbed. So of course, we kasher ovens. That's not the question. But if you're talking about, let's say, Rav Aaron Cutler's position of willing to rely upon libun kal of not actually doing libun, it's because the oven maybe really doesn't need anything in the first place, and because it's the most recha, and biggest problem is if it's not even maybe recha milsahi on Pesach, according to some opinions, so that's why perhaps it should suffice. I don't know, I've never seen Rav Aaron's tshuva, but I imagine that is piece of the logic behind it.
Is there any difference between solid and liquid? The foods that are in the oven?
So the answer is, according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Aruch HaShulchan and my Rabbi, no. According to the Rishonim, it's very explicit. The Rashba says the following. I know what you're thinking of. Ramosha was Machmir, and it's not clear what the basis for this is. It seems to be against the Rishonim. Ramosha was Machmir that you can't use the same oven, let's say, for milk and meat, because of Zeya. Zeya is a concept that's mentioned in Shulchan, not Recha. Recha is smell. Zeya is like sweat, steam, and so on. Mm-hmm. There is a concept of Zeya, but I will just tell you the following. The Rashba, and it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, and I don't think anybody argues on this, and the Rashba says that the only time we are concerned about Recha Milsa is by Tzli. But if it's in a Kedera, the Rashba says, it's not a problem. It's almost explicit in the Gemara, actually. Mm-hmm. But not quite. But the Rashba in the Kedera. Now, what do you put in a Kedera usually? What do you put in a pot when you... What kind of food do you put in a pot when it's an oven? Liquid. So the Rashba says it's only a problem when you have two solid pieces, that when the Isser is solid. But if it's in a pot, that's not a problem. There's far more steam that comes out of a pot than comes out of the... And yet the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk in this mutter. So anyway, I'm going to leave aside Ramosha's position for the moment. The answer is it makes no difference whether you use solids or liquids.
What about the venting aspect?
Sam, did you finish?
Just one thing. It's a separate issue. Can solids be... How does the oven bolea a solid?
It's not, unless you assume that there's some type of reach that comes off of it.
No, but... Mm-hmm.
But other than the...
You're trying to get chametz out of... you're trying to get... But the chametz is a solid, though.
Correct. Correct, but all you're going to be doing, theoretically what you're doing is you're turning up the temperature till you get libun kal. That's what you're doing. Right. So it burns it. It doesn't cause it. Whatever might have possibly theoretically been absorbed is now somehow burned by this libun kal.
But if soup has like noodles, is the water of the soup considered chametz? Yep.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But either way, in other words, by LP din, it shouldn't require, maybe not require anything once the oven is clean. So that's probably why, you know, to turn it up to its hottest setting is more than fine. Isaac?
You mentioned before that now that our ovens are vented.
Yes.
So there's a distinction, there's a chilek between venting or
yes,
lack of venting,
because
or re-venting.
Because if it's susum, if it's totally sealed, then some rishonim will say there's a greater problem. Right, the simple reading again. The Ramah has this chumrah. The Mechaber, according to the Mechaber, I believe you're not allowed. According to the Mechaber, if the oven is big and vented, you're probably allowed to cook milk and meat at the same time. But if you did, and it weren't big and vented, and it was small and sealed, it's also lachatchila, but it's mota b'diyeva. But the Ramah is machmir for some of the shitos that hold Reicha Milsa. He said, I think for the Ramah, once it's vented and big. Then already, certainly nothing is asur b'di'evad. It might be asur d'luchatchila, but it's not asur b'di'evad. Marshall?
I guess I just wonder, I mean, the concept is really similar to a pressure cooker, where yeah. That's the whole point, which is if it's a sealed system, then the juices, the air, or the pressurization goes back into the food and breaks down the fibers and cooks much more quickly. Is it really an issue of re'ach per se, or is that really just the tagline for what's going on with the cooking in a sealed system where, you know, like from the tray piece of meat, it comes out and the whole point of a sealed oven is like a clay pot, is that it jams it back into everything.
So again, if you're that's not what our ovens do. That's not the design to do.
That's the cholek in the shorim, which makes perfect sense because in a pressure cooker...
Right, but a pressure cooker basically is a pot, and a lid of a pot is like the pot. In other words, a milchik pot, when you have a lid that closes, that lid is milchik, right? You stick that in a fleshik pot with food in there, you can trafe up, and as a corn thalach, you can trafe up the meat. So absolutely. Yeah. Right.
What I was saying is they use the word reach. I'm sorry, I wasn't there. I apologize. What I'm asking is it really about reach at all, or is it about the actual metzias of cooking in a closed system, where it's not the smell from the treif meat that you're worried about? It's actually
the mashmaut itself. So here's the problem. They don't seem to understand. I once had the following question I asked Rav Shechter. Some guy came to me and said somebody left chocolate in their fridge open, and there was turkey also open. And the turkey had a taste of turkey or something like that. They never touched. Right, so I asked Rashad, he said, yeah, it's asar. Now, really, really, Reicha, what Reicha is in reality, in chemical reality, is particles, right? There's no such thing. You wouldn't, now that's what smell is. But they, I don't think, obviously couldn't see that, right? So all they could sense was sort of the smell. So it's hard to evaluate what they were sort of thinking. I think they certainly recognize, in other words, they talk about if you take bread and you put it on top of a barrel of wine. And the bread is hot, and the barrel's closed, the barrel's open. But with the barrel open, and the bread is warm, so it seems, the Shugbar says it's also there. And the logic seems to be, is that it's no longer reach, but it's actually shoeves, it draws up the mamashus, the actual mamish, which we would say, of course, is true, because that's what reach is also. It's just by reach, typical cases of reach, it may not be quite as powerful. So it's hard to sort of relate to our categories because it's not clear what they knew, what they understood in terms of the molecular processes. Okay. So anyway, so let's come back to the Gemara. On the top, Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, the fifth line. And here the Gemara, we read this yesterday in Kriyas HaTorah, in Parshas Tzav, right? The Torah says that... The Torah says that when you cook a karban chatas, the earthenware pot in which you cook it shall be smashed. If it has been cooked in a copper kli, umorak vishutaf bamoyim. The question, what does merika mean and what does shtifa mean? Shtifa presumably means to rinse out, right? A river is shotef. Merika is more interesting. We don't encounter that word very often. There's one place I know we encounter in the liturgy, and there are different nuschos, whether it's merok or mechok, but it's probably supposed to be merok. At the end of Yom Noraim's Shmones, right? Yom Noraim's Amida, so when we say Elokai at Shalona Tzarti, Eni Chidai, Va'achshav Shino Tzarti, Ilon Tzarti, so Afarani Bechaya Kavachomis Asai, that all the sins that I did, that merok, right? Merok means to cleanse, to purify, or something like that. So the Torah says in yesterday's reading, Morak v'shutap amayim by a copper vessel, but an earthenware vessel has to be smashed. Okay, why do you have to smash the earthenware vessel? Says the question: is there a mitzvah of shvira? I forget where I just saw this the other day. It's in the Targum actually. The Targum says so that somebody doesn't come to use it, which is very interesting. Others would just say that it's a mitzvah saseh doraisa. The reason why the Torah says you break it is because you can't get all the absorptions out of earthenware. The question is, let's say I just want to leave it around as a flower pot, but it seems that there's a mitzvah saseh actually to do shvira. Not entirely clear. Okay, so anyway, so the Torah there, when it talks about kachim, what is noticeably absent is no discussion of fire. Right? When they conquer the vessels from Midyan, so then the kol of davar shayavova eish tavir veish v'ta'er, and v'chol davar shayavova eish tavir v'mayim. But here, by the pots of hekdesh, when you're going to purify metal pots, nechosha, so it's morach v'shutap amayim. But no mention is made of eish. And so the question is, why? So before we talk about why, the Mishnayos themselves actually reflect this distinction. We just read last week the Mishnah here that says something that's darko lahagil yagil lalaben yalaben ba'or. If it's normally used with hot water, then you magil it. If it's normally used with fire, you do libun. But the Gemara of the Gemara presents the following. Rami le Rav Amram le Rav Shesis, the end of the fourth line. Rav Amram presented a stira, a contradiction between two Mishnayos to Rav Shesis. Tanan, we have a Mishnah, our Mishnah, Shehashipudim va'askala melabnon ba'or, the spit and the grate on which you roast the meat, you have to do libun on. I mean, if you buy it from a guy, and presumably he used it for treif meat, you have to do libun. V'atanan gabe kodshim, but the Mishnah in Zvachim says, Hashpud va'askala mag'ilon b'chamin. You only have to do hagala. So the question is, why? Why does the Mishnah here say that a shpud and askala you have to do libun? And there the Mishnah says that a shpud and askala you only have to do hagala. So Amar le Amram Biri, Rav Sheshis says to Rav Amram, is Amram my son, his student. Matnyan kajam leitzel gila ovechavim. How can you compare the two? Hacha heterabala, ha sami surabala. In our case, so the kodshim was heter when it was absorbed, right? You're cooking a karban chatas, you're cooking a karban shlamim, you're cooking a karban asham. When you're cooking it, there's nothing wrong with it. Obviously, only kohanim can eat it, because only kohanim can eat at least a chatas and asham, even Yisraelim can eat a shlamim. But right now, it's heter when it's absorbed, it's edible. The goy's shpur and askala, what he's cooking right now is treif, it's glat treif. So you can't compare the two. So the Gemara immediately says, one second, but that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. Amar, it should be Rabba. Sof, ki palat, isura kapalat. Who cares what it is when you absorb? What's the problem with the pots of hekdesh? The problem is that I cook today, and I cook a karban chatas. I'm a kohen, let's say I'm a kohen, I cook a karban chatas. Right? So, what's wonderful? Enjoy. Comes the next day, I have absorptions from the karban chatas in the pot, I have flavorings of the karban chatas in the pot, and I cook tomorrow's chatas. The only thing is that yesterday's chatas, when I cook tomorrow, is no sir at that point. It's got to be burned. You're not allowed to eat the karban chatas the next day. Whatever's left over, you burn. So he said that, so what difference does it make when it goes in, what its status is? Doesn't matter whether it's heter, doesn't matter whether it's iser, doesn't matter whether the food is permitted or prohibited. All that matters is that tomorrow, when it emits the flavor into my food, it's a flavor that's prohibited. That's what Rabba says in response to Rav Sheshis' comment. Now, as it's going to turn out, actually, Rav Sheshis' comment is fundamentally correct. The Gemara is going to circle back to that after a number of mistries of solving this contradiction. Why is it that by kachim, the Mishnah says it doesn't mention libun. It's a spit and a grate, you know, of the grill require only hagala. And yet here, when it comes to trey foods in Meseches Avodah Zarah, so there a spit requires libun. It requires fire. So the Gemara is going to come back to this answer in the end, which is very, very significant. And I'll make sure to explain why later. Okay, so, but according to Rav Sheshis' answer, the impression one gets is that the food you were cooking on the spit is not treif, it's heter, then you do not require libun, which I will translate into a broader rule. Any time that you're trying to kasher a kli, where the absorptions that it had when they went in were shel heter, never requires libun. Now we have to define what is called heter when it goes in. Whereas things that when they go in or already have a shame isser, have a status of isser, so those things, if they are used in something where there is no liquid medium, it's just on the fire, then you require libun. Then you have to do a real firing of the kli in order to render it permitted. Okay, so now, Ella Amaraba, okay, on the 10th, 11th line, Ella Amaraba, my hagala nami, no, you know what hagala means? Shtifa umarika. So he says that no, in order to get the isser out, of course you require libun. It's no different. It doesn't matter whether what you cooked on the spit was the guy cooked treif meat. It doesn't matter whether Cohen cooked kachim. He decided to have his kachim. You could cook in a pot if you want. The only thing you can't cook in a pot of kachim is the Karban Pesach, because it has to be tzliyesh. But everything else, you cook, the Kohanim eat however they like. They wanted pot roast, they wanted roasted on the fire, they wanted a stew. It's perfectly fine. So the Kohen takes his chatas, he puts it on the spit. You want to use the spit the next day, you have to do libun. Same thing. What is hagolo that the Mishnah talks about? That's Mariko Shtifa. Rashi explains, if you look at Dibar Maschil Ella Amaraba, the seventh wide line in Rashi, Hai hagolo de katani hasam, in the Mishnah and Zvachim, Mariko Shtifa, klomar, means the following. This is what Rabba was saying. La'olam liflot ha'isser, in order to extract the isser from the spit, vadai libun boy, kishar b'lias isser. But rather, ela mitzvas melachim mekachim. It's a gzeiras hakasev. It's God's mitzvah that when it comes to kachim, a morak v'shutap amayim. That after you do the hagala, you gotta rinse it off. Ki heicha dahavya gzeiras hakasev kasher yizem idamal abeged. The boy kibus b'makom kadosh. Just as the Torah said, we read yesterday also that if the dam of the chatas gets sprinkled on a garment, it has to be washed in the azara. That's the din. And as Rashi says, Ushviras klicheris b'makom kadosh. You have to smash the pottery, and not only have to smash the pottery, but it has to be done, supposed to be done if it's still tahor in the azara. So by the same token, hu adin l'mriko shtifa, the same thing, mriko and shtifa is exeris hakasav. The purpose of mriko and shtifa is not to be machshir the kli so that it won't make the next chatas treif. It won't spit out the nosar, the leftover chatas from yesterday into the food. No, mriko and shtifa is exeris hakasav, but what you really need is libun.
At what point is that done, mriko and
shtifa? Probably after you've done the libun, as I would guess.
And what's the exact translation of mriko and shtifa?
It means I don't know what the... cleansing and a rinse. I would say a cleansing and a rinse.
And why does the kli cheres have to be broken in Mokum Kardash?
It's exeris hakasav. That's the point. It's just exeris hakasav. The reason behind it, presumably, so people won't come to use it again, right? Because the kli is probably, cheres was probably not belong to Hekdesh. But probably, as the Targum says, it's the reason why the Torah demands that you smash the kli cheres is because you don't want someone to cook in that pot, and now you have the time of nosar. Why it has to be Malkom Kadosh, I don't know. Maybe they don't want, I don't know. It's Xeris HaKosov. Okay. So now, Abaye says, no, well. Amar le Abaye. No way. Mi dummy, how can you say that? Mariko Shtifa Betzonein, Hagolos Bechamin. Mariko and Shtifa, the way you're explaining certainly, is cold water. So Hagala, when we use the term Hagala, it means hot water. That's what it means in Mishnei Kibur. So how can you say, when the Mishnah Zvachim says, that the Shpud and the Askala, Magilan, that's not for Hechsher, and that's in cold water? No, it's in hot water, and obviously its purpose is for Hechsher. So Abaye says, Rabba's answer cannot be correct. Ela Amar Abaye, Yagid Alav Re'o. He quotes a pasuk from Iyov, which has nothing to do with this, but the means its friend will inform us about him. In other words, it will fill us in on the picture. What does that mean? It means there are two mishnayos. They're friends. One fills in what the other one doesn't. So one mishnah says that you require libun on a shpur and askala, our mishnah. The mishnah in Gzvachim says you require hagala, and really what you require is both. Tana ha libun v'hu adin lagala. Tana ha sam hagala v'hu adin la libun. No, it's one and the same. So this Rava doesn't like this. Rava now responds to him and says, "What are you talking about?" Amar li Rava ihachi listeninu lechulu b'chada v'lisnei chada b'ida chacharisi. You can't do it that way. You can't have one says A, one says B, and you assume A and B for both. It's one thing if in one place it says you require A and B, and the other place we mention A, we don't mention B. So you say A and B also is understood.
Before that, by his unusual Mishnah arrangement, remember with the Brisa, you know, back when with Avodah Zarah,
right.
You know, matzah, I'll say
matzah. No, I know what you're talking about. I know, I understand.
Rava objected, didn't like the, he said that's it. It was ABA?
But that's different.
It's a grammatical style.
That's a different issue. Yeah. There, you want one brisa to be consistent in the type of case it's dealing with. That's a separate one. Here, we're talking two mishnayos. But Rava says that if you want to make an argument that all the requirements mentioned in both mishnayos are required by both cases, you have to list them all in one to make it clear you need all of them. And the other one, you list one of them, and it's understood as etc. That etc. is missing. So you mention here, say you require libun and hagala on the spit, and then in zvachim you say you require hagala, or you require libun, and it's understood. Libun and the rest of the list. That's what Rava says in response to Abaye. So Ela Amar Rava. Rava comes up with his own answer. Kodshim hainu tamayu kidrav nachman Amar Rava baravua. The Amar kol yom v'yom nase giul lachavera. This is really interesting. And this is, I'm not going to talk about it, but this becomes a subject of a major debate in Yoredeya. He says like this, each day serves as the giul lachavera. So this is what it appears Rava had in mind. When you cook a karban shlamim, and this only works by shlamim, which the Gemara is about to point out. When you cook a karban shlamim today, so the period of time that you have to eat the meat of a karban shlamim is today, tonight, the day you shecht it. Remember, by kodshim is the only place in halacha where the day precedes the night. Everywhere else, night precedes the day. So the day you shecht it, the night that follows, and the next day. Shlamim is the karban that's eaten l'shnei yamim v'layla echad. So what Rava suggests is the following. And let's forget chatas for now. You cook a shlamim today. What about cooking in this pot tomorrow? Well, that's not a problem, because even if you ate all the shlamim from yesterday, you're still allowed to eat the shlamim tomorrow. You have an extra time. Now what do? I cook the new day's shlamim in it, right? Because I ate the shlamim from yesterday. So Rava says that the new day shlamim goes into the pot, you cook it in the pot, and it only almost serves as hagala. In other words, what different? You put water in, so you put meat in also. I mean, I don't recommend this because it'll make your kalim dirty, right? But theoretically, there's no reason why, you know, if you have a soup, let's say a soup, and you want to do hagala with soup, that you can't do hagala with soup, right? The Ramah says, b'dievet, if you use yayin or other mashkim, it's good for hagala. So Rava says that when I cook the chatas in the pot the next day, kol yom nasis gi'ul lachavero, it serves as the hagala for the previous day. So assuming, and the Gemara is going to point out the problem right now, so I'm assuming that I cook shlamim today, today shlamim, tomorrow I make sure to cook tomorrow shlamim, the next day I cook the following day shlamim, each time you do shlamim is doing hagalah on that which came before, and there's no problem of eating today shlamim, even if it absorbed from yesterday shlamim, because I'm still allowed to eat theoretically yesterday shlamim, it's not nosar yet, I have an extra 12 hour of the day period on it. So that's what Rava says, kol yom yivayom nases gil lachavera. So the Gemara immediately says, one second, that doesn't add up. Tenach shlamim. That's true if you're cooking shlamim. Dechevon, the lishnei yamim misaklei. Since it can be eaten for 2 days, day, night, and day. Mikame deneve nosar kohave gil. Before it ever becomes nosar, you do hagala, and you get out whatever flavor of yesterday's shlamim was absorbed, and it's gone. Elachatas, when it comes to carbon chatas, kevan de liyom valayla misakla, can only be in the next night. Kimivashil boha yindana chatas, when you cook chatas now, have no sar. It will be no sar, it becomes no sar after the night. Kihadam ravashil le lamachar, oshlamam al chatas, whatever you cook tomorrow, kapolit no sar de chatas tahidana, bechatas ushlamam de lamachar. The chatas that I cooked in it today, when I cook in it tomorrow, whether I cook shlamim or I cook chatas, is going to absorb yesterday's chatas, which is already no sar. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion. Lo tsricha. No, you know what we do? He's the Kohanim are careful. Dechi mevasho b'chatas ha'idana. Whenever a Kohen cooks any pot that a chatas is cooked in, hadam mevasho b'ha'idana shlamim. So you make makbid to cook in it a shlamim after that today.
Which is good for the next 2 days.
Ah. Says in the chatas de lemachar ushlamim de estmal bahadeh adadeh kashalim zimnayu. In other words, today's shlamim will get out yesterday's shlamim, and today's chatas, and you have no problem. Whatever you cook chatas in something, you must cook a today's shlamim in it after the chatas, and that will do the giul right now. And right now, the chatas you can still eat. And then vahadeh mavashal de shlamim de lemachar. Then you can cook tomorrow shlamim in it. Once you make sure that you got, the last thing I cook is a shlamim that I can still eat tomorrow in the pot today. I shafted the shlamim today. I make sure it's the last thing I cook in the pot. There will be no problem tomorrow because whatever was in the pot today comes out into this shlamim that I cook in it now. And the only thing now absorbed in the pot is today's shlamim, which tomorrow is still not going to be a problem. So then the Gemara asks an obvious question. Whoa, but if that's the case, ihachi, Hagala nami loli boy. Why do you require Hagala? Why? You just said you did Hagala. So why do you require Hagala? There are probably answers to this question. The Gemara says Kasha. So the Rashbam, somewhere in the Daf Yomi recently, I was hunting for this for years, and I finally found it. I thought it was a rush somewhere I'd read as a teenager, and maybe there is, but using the Bar Ilan search, I couldn't find it. But this is not where I'm sure I first saw it. There's a Rashbam who says, somewhere between the beginning of Baba Basra, where he starts on Daf Chavtes or something, Olamid, and the current Daf Yomi, and it was at least a couple of weeks ago. The Rashbam says something which is generally known, which is that when the Gemara says Tiyufta, it means the previous position is wrong. And there's no answer to the question. When the Gemara says Kasha, there may be an answer to the question, and the Gemara chooses not to give it. So there actually may be some very good answers to this particular question. But for the moment, since the Gemara leaves it as a Kasha, I'm not going to go into what those possibilities might be. But the Gemara seems to reject this. So finally, the Gemara comes on to two final answers. Rav Papa Amar, Hai Karid, Hai Lo Karid. Rav Papa says that by Kodshim, you're right, there's a problem. It really should have required Libun. However, since it was only in the pot for a short time, it's still soft. It's not congealed. It's not hard. And Libun is enough to get it out. Whereas, by Isser, because Kodshim pots that cook in every single day. But when it comes to Issa, the Goy man, and I've used this for a while. In fact, we have a rule in Yeridea. You have to know whether it still applies today. I mentioned earlier what we mentioned last week, which is that if you cook in a tray pot after 24 hours, the food is kosher, unless it's a sharp food that you're cooking in it now. But let's say you don't know whether the pot was used for 24 hours. It's a standard, whenever the rabbi, if any of you called the rabbi for a shayla, you use some type of a vessel, he probably asked you, when was the last time you used it before it? That's like rule number one. You want to know, was the milk pot used with milk in the last 24 hours or not? Because if not, you're usually in the clear. So the question is, what if you don't know? So the Gemara, the Rishonim have a rule, which may or may not be true today, with respect to non-Jews, that Stam Kalim, and maybe Jews also, Stam Kalim are not Bnei Yomon. That kelim are ordinary, not bnei yomon. Now that's not it's not halacha l'moshe miSinai that we assume that a kli has not used in the 24 hours. It's a reflection of a reality. In the Beis HaMikdash, they were cooking every single day. They were bringing kachin every single day. Those pots were being used every single day. You can't say in the Beis HaMikdash that stam kelim are not a bnei yomon. If you had a pot in the Beis HaMikdash that you knew wasn't used in 24 hours, that would be one thing. So what Rav Papa says here, basically, he's assuming it sounds like Stam Kalim of Nachram are not Bnei Yomon. It's been a while since they've been used normally, and therefore the stuff in it congeals, whereas the Kachim pots are being used on a constant basis, and therefore the Blios never have a chance to congeal. Now, what this says to me, and I don't know if I mentioned this last week, it's hard to know now, because since I'm giving Shir on Yoridea, now we're overlapping a lot, so I don't know where I say something. There is a machlokas harishonim. When we talk about eino ben yomo, does that apply only to the stuff absorbed fully in the pot, or even to a film on the surface of the pot? There are rishonim who say that even a film, a greasy film left on the surface of the pot, becomes pogum, becomes no sein tam lefgam, becomes damaging in flavor after 24 hours. We may mention this at the beginning of last week, where I suggested that I suspect that part of the reason why we have such dissonance with their with the laws of Blios Kalim is because our Kalim don't really absorb A, but B, because we have emulsifiers and hot water readily available, so our Kalim really come clean. Whereas their Kalim, without boiling hot water, was very hard to get clean. So this Gemara, Rapapa, sounds like that's really what he's talking about. I can't imagine, again, I don't know what Blios inside of Kalim are actually like, but I don't imagine that there's that much of a difference. But a film on the inside of the pot, you can sort of see how when it's been used recently, it's still easier to get it off, whereas if it's been sitting there and it kind of cakes on, that's when you would require a much stronger form of hechsher. But whichever it is, Reb Papa says that the difference between kachim, our Mishnah, and our Mishnah, kachim, you only require hagala because the blios are very recent and don't have the time to become very solid and hard and stuck, whereas by kachim, the pots are in constant use and therefore it's easy to get the blios out, and therefore hagala is sufficient. Marshall?
So let's just talk halacha ma'isa for a second.
The halacha ma'isa is going to come after the next part. But go ahead. What's your question, Al?
I'm highly confident it's not in the Gemara.
Okay.
So you rent a vacation house.
Yes.
You just said, although I assume you meant b'di'evit.
B'di'evit, correct. You're not allowed to use the kelim l'chatchila if you know they're bolei atreif. Yes.
Right. So you're there for 24 hours, so now you know with 100% certainty that they're not ein ha'benyamin.
Right.
We always travel with all of our own pots, which is a huge pain, but we've done it. Are you saying that you personally, if you went to a vacation house with your family, would simply do hagala and boil the pots found in your vacation home and use them?
I mean, I don't know what I would do in that case, but I absolutely 100% mutter. Why not?
What's the difference between
that is not, but that's nothing to do with this. In other words, pots as a general rule, except for frying pans, which are a big issue, leaving that aside, regular pots are cooked typically with water. So of course you do. Why can't you do hagala? The minhag is we don't do hagala within 24 hours. There are reasons for that. I don't know if I have a chance to touch upon this morning. We don't do hagala within 24 hours, but once 24 hours have passed, and you could, if you found out that no one had been in that thing for 24 hours, then you could do hagala immediately on them, yeah.
Okay, but would you?
In theory, yes. Why not?
You're still hedging, would you?
Yes.
Okay, so if you went on vacation, you would bring only frying pans and you would kosher the pots in the house.
I'm stuck down the part if I'm going on vacation to a place that I actually cook. But the answer is yes. Why is that a problem? Why can't you kosher Treif Kalim?
It's metal. Yeah.
Why not?
100% metal.
I'm still trying to think of where I'm going that I'm going to be cooking. But so I'm stuck on that. But yeah, the answer is yes.
You're going to fail, by the way.
There you go.
Thank you. You're taking me. Okay. Thank you. I don't ski though. I run, but I don't ski. The answer is yes. 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 Okay. So now the Gemara comes back. Ravashi Amar. Liolam kida amaran me ikara. Hacha hetera bala. He wants to go back to Rav Sheshes' original answer to the question, the first answer. Now, why did the Gemara reject it? So, the question you had, the be'idana de kapalit, isura kapalit, you said, who cares what the status of the absorptions are when they go into the pot? The bottom line is, even if the chatas goes into the pot when it's mutter to eat for the kohanim, when it comes out the next day into the whatever you're cooking in it, it's no sar. It's a big isser. So that was your question. Who cares what is when it goes in? He says, "Be'idanak de kapalit lo isa le'isur be'ene." When it is spitting out the isser is no longer be'en. Now, first I have to explain what it means literally. I have to explain why this should matter. We talk about tray food in a pot. We talk about two kinds of things: the be'en and the blios. Be'en means it's sort of tangibly extant. As opposed to something which you cannot hold in your hand. Now, blios, you can, the stuff stuck in the pot, you can hold in your hand. You scrape it off, you can hold in your hand. You get it on your hand. Blios, the absorptions, you're never going to see. It's not called be'en. There might be, maybe there are molecules that flavor. You can't sort of tangibly detect that, let's say with your hands or something like that. So that's why we say something is be'en. It means it's extant, it's tangible, versus just blios. So what Ravashi says is, you know why it's not a problem if it goes in its head there? Because when it's polaint, the isser is no longer be'en. So that's what the words mean. The question is, who cares? What difference does it make? How is that answered the question? The bottom line is, again, any blios are not be'en. When they come out, they flavor the food. So what's going on here? So Ravashi has an unbelievably important yisod here, and it comes up in your daily with milk or meat, and some Rishonim say by chametz, which is as follows. Well, you have a carbon chatas. Right now it's mutter to eat. what happens after the allotted time period of eating? So an isser is chal, as we like to say in the base medrash. The isser sets in on it. You have a piece of meat that was chatas you were supposed to eat. And it's nosar. And if now someone eats it, the chayiv karis. If you cook nosar in a pot, the tam in the pot is the tam of nosar. Meaning if you waited to cook it in the pot till after till it came nosar already. But when you cook meat that's chatas, that's mutter in the pot, and now you clean the pot out, like you don't need to for these purposes, the pot's now clean. All that's left of the chatas is the blios that are inside the pot, not the be'en. Rav Ashi says is that the isser of nosar cannot set in upon something that doesn't have mamashus. It's not a significant enough. You don't have to explain it this way, and it's probably not even correct, but it might sort of help illustrate it. The Torah, in effect, only said the food that you're supposed to eat, if you don't eat it when you're supposed to, it becomes nosar. You're not supposed to eat the blios in the pot. You can't eat the blios in the pot. So once it's all you're left with are blios in the pot, nosar cannot be chal upon that. It's so insignificant. Another example would be, let's say, this is for a complicated case, let's say you have, going down a rabbit hole, I hope I get out of this. You know the famous DE controversy, dairy equipment. Let me explain. We will probably one day revisit this, but let me just explain this briefly. The Gemara says in Chulin, in the eighth parak, that if I take a fleshik pot, which means it's clean, but it was used within 24 hours to cook meat, and now I cook fish in it, I can eat the fish with milk. Why? Now, this is machlokas harishonim. The way the Mechaber paskins and the way the Ramah paskins in a real b'di'evit situation, the reason is as follows. Because the flavor of the milk in the fish is only a secondary tam. It's called nat bar nat. No same tam bar no same tam. The meat put flavor into the pot. The pot put flavor into the fish. Right now, it's mutter. Everybody agrees you can eat the fish. There's no question about that. When you're dealing with nat bar nat of hetera, of something where it's still mutter, the halacha is it's not tam at all. And that's why now I have fish, which has a secondary tam of basar. Since the fish is mutter to eat, I can now eat the fish with milk. It's not fleshik fish. That does not apply by isser. If I cook chazir in a pot, and now I cook fish in that pot, the fish is treif, because of the chazir. Why? Because you'll say the chazir put flavor into the pot, and the pot put flavor into the fish. That's not bar nat. It doesn't matter. Not bar nat doesn't work by isser. Why? So the Rishonim explain the following. The reason why, only reason why, it's not that nat bar nat is not flavor at all. If nat bar nat, if the secondary tam were totally indetectable, if it were chazir, it would also be mutter. If chazir falls into your pot, but you can't taste it, the food is mutter. Why is it that by chalav, even though there is a faint taste of the chalav, it's mutter, the answer is because the only reason why, or basar, what's the issue? The issue is that if I take basar and chalav and I mix them together, that's basar b'chalav. But if the tam of one of them is so faint in the first place, it doesn't have a significant enough amount of tam of basar or chalav to create what we call a chalos of basar b'chalav. When you cook basar b'chalav, you got to cook basar with chalav. And if it's basar with chalav, that's not basar b'chalav. There's the tam is so weak that it's not enough to generate basar b'chalav when you cook them together. That only applies when you're dealing with something which is heter. When it comes to isser, if I start with chazir, it's chazir. I can't have the tam of chazir. It doesn't matter if it's the secondary tam, if it's not bar not. It doesn't matter if it's not bar not, bar not. It doesn't matter. As long as I can still detect the chazir, it was usser when it started out. It always remains usser. So it's the same idea that when you have something of heter and the tam is so weak, therefore isser cannot be chal upon it. So if it is still heter, there'll be no problem with isser. That is, in effect, what Rav Ashi is saying. He's saying for the isser nosar to be chal on kachim, the kachim has to be be'en, it has to be extant, it has to be significant. Once you're talking about just the blios inside the pot, it's such a chalish, it's such a weak tam, isser nosar can't be chal upon it. That's not basar. It might have the flavor of basar, but it's not basar enough for nosar to be chal. Why is this such a... Now, what this means then, lemaase actually, is that whenever you are dealing with a pot that is either milchix or fleshix, and let's say you want to make it parv, you never require, if you can do hagala, you never require libun. Why not? The answer is, because it's hetera bala. Because when You have to. This is not bar not. This is not. But you have to always be careful and sheer. You can't use the English word not with not bar not of the Hebrew. If we are not, what I am talking about now is not a case of not bar not. In other words, you cook milk. You cook, let's say, milk in this pan, and you want to make it parv. Now, or you want to make it fleishig. Forget the minog that we have a minog, sort of a weak minog that we don't kasher milk to fleishig. We do it Pesach time. But let's say you're kasher and you want to kasher a milk pan and you want to make it fleishig. Obviously, you can't put the fleishig in now and cook it in the milk pot and say, oh, it's not bar not, because in order for not bar not to be permitted, it has to be shel heter. But here, if the milk goes into the pot and now it goes from the pot into the meat, you've gotten to the second, though, same time, but it's Isser now, it's Basar B'chalav. You need a buffer. You need the fish where you cook in the milk pot, and now the fish is par. But here we're doing Hagala. So the Halacha is that once you do Hagala on this pot, even though in theory, this milk pot, even though in theory, you should if you want to get all of the milk, well, let's do it the other way, meat. You want to get all of the meat out of this spit. The only way to get all the meat out of the spit, really every last iota flavor, is to do libun. But guess what? The meat was heter. So all I want to do is weaken the flavor of the meat enough so that it no longer has a chashivus of basar, so now if I use it with milk, it can't become basar b'chalav. So therefore, I can take my spit, I can take my fleishikli, and I can, even though ordinarily, if this were tray food, let's say, it would require libun, it only requires hagala. Okay? So milk, no tarfus, milk or meat, as long as you can do the hagala, you can submerge it in the boiling water, so it never, alpidin, it never requires libun. So now the question is, the magic iser of the day, chametz before Pesach. What is the status of chametz kodem ha-Pesach? Is it iser or is it heter? Now, on the one hand, you're tempted to say, it's heter balab. Why? Because I can eat chametz now. On the other hand, you could say, it already has the same iser of chametz, it's just not Pesach yet. Now, the nafgamina, of which are the two positions you pick, obviously, is does the Shulchan Aruch in Or HaChaim, when it talks about Hagalas Kalim for Pesach, does it even have to mention the word Libun? If you believe that Chametz before Pesach, when it's absorbed by pots or Kalim, is called Hetei Rabbala at that time, then you should never need to do Libun for stuff for Pesach. If, however, it's Isur Rabbala, even though it's Mutar Yid Chametz before Pesach, but it already has the shame Isur Chametz, then things that would then the chametz is ready on it, and therefore you have to do a libun on those things that require libun. Now the short answer to the question is the Shulchan Aruch, as you might guess, talks about the dinim of libun in Aruch Chaim, which means we paskin isura bala. However, it is a big machlokas harishonim on this, and I want to read the bottom Tosos, maybe as our last act, as because Tosos happens to be amongst those rishonim who thinks maybe that chametz might be. Well, it's not clear what he thinks chametz is isur habala or not. But let's take a look at it. Tosa says the following. Going back to an earlier part, of the Gemara had asked the question, if no Saint Talmud Gam is mutter, why can't you just use pots after 24 hours? And the Gemara's answer is because we're afraid you're going to use the pot within 24 hours. So the Gemara had asked me, Kanva Eilach Lishteri, why isn't it permitted to cook in the pot after 24 hours? The Gemara says it's a gzera. Tosa says, Hilkach, Dover Hamavushal Bakli She'eno Benyomo Mutter. What I said to you earlier, if you cook kosher food in a treif pot after 24 hours, you're allowed to eat the food. You're not allowed to cook that way, but you're still allowed to eat the food if you did it. V'yesh lo ses tam, maro lahatir hamachal v'leser hakadera. Why is the food permitted, but the pot is still aser? So Tosa says, l'fi shakadera hayabo iser gamar t'chila. Tosa says the following, you know why you're not allowed to use the pot? Because when the pot absorbed the iser, the tarfus originally, at that point the pot really was aser to use. It would have treifed up the food. In other words, when the tam of iser went into the pot, it was lishma. It was good, it tasted good, and it was usher to eat. Aval hamachal, but the food, when the food absorbed the flavor of the tray food, lo nivlabo isser me'olam. When did the tam go into the food? When it was pugam already. So since when it went into the food, it was already pugam. There's no isser at all on the food. And now Tosa says, v'hagolas kli ben, therefore, Hagolas kli ben yoma ein lahagil ela b'shishim. Tosa says, therefore, when you do hagola on a kli, which was used in the last 24 hours, you're not supposed to do it unless you have 60 times the volume of the kli and the water you're doing hagola. Ela b'shishim, deshamnunis haniflat b'chamin tam l'shvachu. When you do hagola in a pot, what are you doing? You're getting it to emit all of the stuff it absorbed. Now, how much did the pot absorb? We don't know how much, but therefore we always assume it might have absorbed the maximum of the volume of the walls of the pot. Therefore, you have to make sure you have enough water to be mevatel that potential tam. The only reason why we permit hot water heated by a non-Jew is elamishum distam klam ena b'neyoman. So that's what Tosa says, that when you do Hagala on a treif kli, you must have 60 times the volume of the walls of the kli, not what the pot holds, but the actual material of the pot, because you might need that amount to be mevatalit. Why? Because it's Isser. The pot might be absorbed of Isser. But here's where it gets interesting. Aval, kishimagilon magilon kli chametz be'er Pesach, bi'ar basha'os, d'shas heter hi, if you're going to kasher kelim on Erev Pesach, before the end of the fourth hour, where chametz is mutter, Satosa says, "Yochol lahagil afilu kli ben yomo bepachos mishishim." You don't need shishim in the water. You know why? To have a no sentam ben no sentam shel heter chametz shel heter. Why? It's not barnat of heter. Why? Satosa explains the chametz bikara. The chametz flavored the pot. Umimenu lamayim. And now the chametz now goes from the pot into the water. That's already the second time. Chametz into the pot, pot back into the water. Are you allowed to drink that water right now before 4 hours? Mm-hmm. For sure. Therefore, umen amayim, you're worried about what will happen now, that from that chametz that came out into the water, it'll get reabsorbed into the pot. Tosa says, umen achoze amayim choze v'nivla b'ka'ara v'adayin akol heter. The Tosa says, it's still heter. Okay, so that's what Tosa sounds like. Tosa says, if you kasher before 4 hours, then it's not a problem. You don't require shishim. Why? Because it's heter, and you can apply the principle of not bar not. So I'm going to close with one. So firstly, halacha lemaisa, the Rama says, we're afraid people are going to make a mistake. We never kasher anything that's a ben yoma. So even before 4 hours, you have to make sure the kelim are not ben yom, and that's why we tell people that you wait 24 hours, before kashering and stuff for Pesach. It does mean, however, that in situations of shas adchak, b'dieved, if need be, it will be permissible to kasher. Let's say you have a disaster on your hands, so a rav conceivably might permit, saying normally we don't do it, but this is a b'dieved. The person has no choice. It's number one. But number two, this is what gets more interesting. Tosus and the Rush both adopt this position. If this is true, does any? If we're saying that it's heter, and Al Pidin, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins this way. Al Pidin, before 4 hours, you don't have to do. You don't need shishim in the water, and the chametz dikapats don't need to be ena b'nei yoma. So the question is, do you ever have to do libun on kelim for Pesach? Because after all, Tosus is saying it's heter abala. So the interesting thing is that the Rush says, number one, that he says like Tosus here, that when you do Hagala before 4 hours, you can apply the rule of not barnat of tam of heter, the tam of chametz is heter. And the Rush also says that kelim which you use on fire during the year for chametz, you have to do libam before Pesach, because chametz kodama Pesach is isura bala. Now this seems to be a contradiction. Is chametz before Pesach isur or not? The Shulchan Aruch Paskin is exactly like the Rush. The Vilna Gaon and the Mishnah Brura think there's a stira in the Shulchan Aruch. But the Aruch HaShulchan points out that there is no obviously there's no contradiction, because the Shulchan Aruch didn't paskin like two different people and not realize there was a contradiction. There are a number of Rishonim who paragraphs apart, paskin one way and paskin the other way. Apparently, the standards of Heter for Nat Barnat and the standards of Heter for when we require Liban versus Hagala are two different things. Apparently, Chametz before Pesach is called Isura Bala with respect to requiring Libun, and Chametz with respect to the rules of Nat Barnat when you're kashering before Pesach, apparently it's called Heter. I'm not going to try to explain why. God willing, when we come back to this at a later point, maybe take a couple years, we will probably explore it more fully, and I will look at that Aruch HaShulchan. God willing, we should all be here. But bottom line, the Maisa for Pesach, so this Gemara matters a lot, because whether since we have a principle that anything that's bolea beheter doesn't require libun if you could do hagala physically on it, therefore chalav alone or basar alone, we say that it's hetera bala, it's not a problem. Chametz kodem pesach is a machlokes harishonim, whether or not it's called the surah bala hetera bala. Those rishonim who say that chametz before pesach is called hetera bala never require libun in preparation for pesach, only would require hagala as long as you can do hagala. But the Shulchan Aruch happens to paskin that things that normally require libun kodem ha-pesach, in preparing for Pesach. And yet, at the same time, the Shulchan Aruch paskins al-pidin, even the Ramah accepts it al-pidin, although the minhag is to be machmir, is that as long as you're kashering before the fourth hour, you don't have to worry whether or not there's shishim in the water or kenega the pots you're kashering. You don't have to have the kalim not be b'nei yoman, because with respect to the principle of not barnat, of secondary tam, this chametz before Pesach is not barnat of hetera. So again, the minhag is we wait 24 hours before kashering kalim as a rule before Pesach, lest we're afraid people will get confused. But things that do require libun, and ordinarily, let's say for treif stuff, would also require libun for chametz before Pesach, because with respect to that, it is Isur Abala. Any questions? I'd like to wish everybody a chag kosher v'sameach. I look forward to Be'ezus Hashem Yisparach. Shir will resume the Sunday after, right after Pesach.